Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino, and I have got a podcast that I'm very excited for you to listen to. The subject today is not specifically Survivor, but it is something that I thought was important for the listeners of our Survivor podcast, and it is all about seven ways to improve your mental well-being. And we're going to be talking with one of our listeners. His name is Alec Hester, and he reached out to me as a longtime listener and thought that he might have some good tips to share with the listeners. He studies sociology, positive psychology, and specifically happiness. And he has seven ways that you might be able to improve your mental well-being. And he has some really great tips and pointers that you might be interested in listening to here in this conversation. Of course, we have a great sponsor for this episode of the podcast to tie into that. And that would be our friends over at BetterHelp Online Counseling. Now, look, we are in extraordinary times. And if you're struggling with stress, anxiety, or depression, believe me, you are not alone. BetterHelp offers online licensed professional counselors who are trained to listen and help. BetterHelp counselors specialize in many areas, including relationship conflict, anxiety, depression, loss, trauma, and more. You can securely connect with your counselor in a safe and private online environment. Everything you share is confidential. All you do is you fill out a questionnaire to help assess your needs and get matched up with a counselor in under 48 hours. Then you go online and schedule your video or phone sessions with a therapist, plus exchange unlimited messages. And if for any reason you're unhappy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time at no additional charges, no questions asked. You'll get the professional help that you want wherever you are. BetterHelp is an affordable option, and our listeners get 10% off your first month with discount code RHAP. Join the over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. I got to try it out, and it couldn't have been easier. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Get started today at betterhelp.com/RHAP. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/RHAP. Talk to a therapist online and get help. We have a treat for you today because this is a podcast I had been looking forward to for the last couple of weeks that I had been talking with this gentleman that we're going to have on the podcast today. This is a conversation that came up on one of, I believe it was a Facebook Friday call that I do with the patrons of the podcast where people get to call up and ask me questions. And this gentleman called in. His name is Alec Hester, and he has been studying happiness, and we'll get into his background a lot more, but we're going to be talking about seven different ways to improve your overall well-being, and I'm so excited to talk about this. Alec, how are you?
I am so great, Rob. Thank you so much for having me on. I never envisioned that when I was speaking out about happiness for the first time in my career, that it would be during one of the least happy times in our nation's history.
Well, this is why we need you more than ever, Alec. And I hope I did not do you an injustice with that introduction. So, Alec, can you just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure, I would love to. So a little bit about how I got into this research to begin with. I was basically in a situation where I had a job. I had another job that I really wanted, and as I'm sure many people can relate, I sort of fixated every single thing about my life and my lifestyle about trying to get this next job. So I spent probably 2 years going for this. I got the job. I hated the job. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I sort of had to reevaluate. You know, I spent all of this time just chasing after this one thing, and it didn't even end up giving me the happiness that I thought that it would. So I actually ended up transferring. I took a little bit of a hit in pay so that I could go to a different job. And at that point, I was kind of like, okay, if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to totally like reverse track from what I've been doing before, I'm going to need to figure something out. And I was inspired by a quote by Eleanor Roosevelt. And she said to do one thing that scares you every day. And I decided that I was going to live my lifestyle with a similar mantra. I was just going to do something to progress my happiness every day. And I didn't really know what I was going to be getting myself into. But when a year down the line, I looked back at that moment where I'd made that choice, I realized that I was really happy and I kind of wanted to know why. Like, why did this work? And could I theoretically use these same tactics that I used to help other people? So one of the things that I had done during this journey was go back to school. I had been a college dropout and I ended up getting a degree in sociology. Now, the field of happiness research is generally referred to as positive psychology, which in the social sciences basically means it's an individual approach at looking at people's happiness, really. And sociology is more about looking at society as a whole. So when I think about happiness, I'm trying to think about how I can help the most people, how we can look at lots of patterns about the life that we see, a lot of different types of social studies, and how we're going to be able to apply that to help individual people be happier as well. So I'll go into later why exactly my tactic did work. Along the way, I managed to learn tons of other things that I never even knew from the start. And I'm even happier now than I was at that landmark point at that 1 year in. So
great. Well, I'm really excited to talk about this. I think this is a very fascinating subject, and I always like to, listen to audiobooks that are, anything that's like self-development, YouTube videos. So I think that this kind of thing is super interesting. And so we're going to be very focused on, would you say this is mostly self-care, where I think that most people right now are maybe looking so much outside at the world and are not thinking about the things that they could just be doing for themselves and on themselves to try to improve their mental well-being right now.
Yes, this is absolutely about self-care. I do want to make sure that I mention one of the things about understanding happiness research is that you have to understand sadness too. And I want the listeners to know this is a very unhappy time and things are very hard. And I know that it's hard when you look out and you see all of these things on the news and it's very frustrating. But today I really want to help you find ways to, improve your well-being alongside your sadness rather than fight against it.
Okay. All right. So, Alec, before we get into these tips, is there anything else that you want to set up for the listeners to prepare them for this conversation?
Yeah. So there's a couple things. First of all, this is really important. Mental health and mental illness are two different things. What I'm giving everybody is lots of ways to improve their general mental health because everybody has mental health, right? But I want to make sure that it's very clear that I'm not using this research as a way to diagnose any kind of mental illness. Therapy is fantastic. I think everybody can benefit from therapy. If you are feeling like your sadness is debilitating, I highly recommend to reach out. There are resources available. I'll do my best to give you lots of good tips. By all means, listen to the podcast. But remember, help is there.
Okay. All right. And this is just the beginning of maybe a longer journey for some people that we're going to just be touching on some things that are mostly just like top level things here in this podcast.
Yeah, the fact is that everybody is at a different starting line. And that's another really important distinction is there's a little bit of a myth out there that all you need is hard work. And if you just keep working hard, then everything is going to work out for you. But some people, due to all sorts of different things in the world, including social inequalities, it's much more difficult for them to be happier than others. And that's a hard thing to accept. And unfortunately, life is not always fair, and damn, I really wish it was. In this case, I want to be a person, and this is, applies to my research in general. This is the mission that I have when I am trying to get to people. I want to be able to provide tips that can help everybody somehow.
Yeah.
And yes, some people are going to have to work a little bit harder for it to help as much as they'd like. But I want most of these things to be free things that people can do. And I just want to make sure that the message is out there that I know that people are hurting for real. And they've got situations that you and I, Rob, can probably not even fathom. But that doesn't mean that there's nothing that you can get out of this. And I really hope that at the end of the day, there's at least a couple people who gain something that they can take home with them to feel a little bit better at the end of the day.
Sure. Certainly. And in the same way, if we were doing a podcast on some ways to improve your physical well-being, if you had, you know, extenuating health circumstances, that those were things that could not be properly addressed in a podcast about some tips to improve your physical well-being, the same is true with mental health and mental conditions that are out there.
Yeah, that's entirely true. And it's an excellent point in general, Rob, that the reason that I am giving you guys seven tips and not seven steps is because steps imply that everybody is the same. And ultimately, all of these steps are going to work the same way for the same people. I do not believe that everybody is the same. I think that people need to adapt to their own needs. So, you know, it's one thing to say exercise is great and exercise is great. But there's some people who are not going to be able to exercise mm-hmm. the same way. And we need to remember that we need to be providing steps to everybody and giving something out there that everybody can benefit from. And I try to make sure that I leave enough there to where nobody leaves feeling like they weren't able to get anything out of it.
Okay, great. All right. So we sort of have framed this conversation. We know what it is. We know what it isn't. Okay, let's start getting to the good stuff, Alec.
Yeah.
Okay. How do you want to kick off this conversation?
So let's start by defining what I will call happiness for this conversation. But before I do that, Rob, I'm going to quiz you a little bit.
Okay.
What is happiness to you? And I know that's a big question.
Yeah. So I don't know if I have like a clinical definition, but that I know for me, like for Rob Cesternino personally, what is happiness?
Yeah, that's exactly the point too.
Well, for me personally, it's sort of, you know, the lack of problems. That is a big step. And then also that in just my own personal experience, you know, the act of working on something. So, you know, it's not just that, not just existing, but also we're doing something, we're getting ready to do something, we're working on something, and it's going great. There's no problems we can't solve. It doesn't mean that there's not a problem. Maybe we're solving a problem. It's like, haha, look at this. This is great. We're fixing this problem. But there's no problems that are stopping me from trying to do what I'm trying to do next.
So, okay, great. Both of those are really good. And I will be touching on both of them to some extent as we progress further. The reason that I asked is because happiness is a very individual experience. And when social science studies ask the question, like, how happy are you? We need to remember that a lot of people are going to be answering that question from their personal definition of what happiness is. For this specific podcast, I'm going to use a definition from Dr. Sonia Lubomirsky from UC Riverside. She's one of the leading happiness researchers in the field. And she defines happiness for the scientific purpose of being happy in your life and being happy with your life. And a lot of people may feel a disconnect sometimes between maybe they feel like they should be happier than they should. Like, oh, it seems like my life is in place. Why am I not there? Well, I think that's because there are these two facets to what happiness is. And it's very possible to have one and not the other. So like being happy in your life is sort of like you're experiencing positive emotions on a frequent basis. Whereas being happy with your life is kind of having a sense that you're satisfied with where your life is going. So kind of like what you're talking about is making constant progress toward your goals. This obviously can't encapsulate everything that happiness means to everybody,
yeah.
But it's a good point of reference for what we're going
to
work with
and
today.
I just also want to go back to, I mean, I think that that's what happiness means for me now. When I think back to times when I was younger, in like happy times of that, when I was in college and stuff like that, believe me, I was not getting anything productive done at that point, but I do think of those as some of the happiest times. So I don't know if there was something that I was that there was some goal that I can't really put my finger on that I was working towards at that time. I know there were lots of short-term goals I was working on back then, but there were very few long-term goals that I was working on at that point in time. But I do think of that as like a very happy period in my life. So I don't know if that changes as I've gotten older, or if it changes that for maybe there's a different way to contextualize that period in my life, that maybe that was working on something.
Well, you're capturing something really important, which is there is no right way to be happy. Mm-hmm. You know, if we go through this list and somebody's already really happy, I don't want them to start thinking of all the things that they need to change because, this doesn't line up with this outline. If you were really happy from those memories, that's great. I think that a big thing that I look at a lot is fulfillment. Mm-hmm. Maybe when you were a kid, you didn't necessarily feel empty with the fact that there was more ahead, and that's good. I think a lot of people of the generation right now who are like probably the age that you were then do feel like, oh man, like I've really got to figure this out. And they're having a tough time kind of embracing the really nice moments. Mm-hmm. And that does vary from person to person. You hit on a really good point there.
And I would add that I would not be happy today to be doing any of the things that I would be happy doing in the State University of Oswego circa 1999. That would be one that in my mind, those would be that's like a worst possible day to be sitting around the house with a bunch of guys doing nothing all day, no podcasts in sight anywhere. So that just throwing that out there also, Alan.
That is absolutely fair. And later on, we'll talk about time affluence and how people feel about how they're spending their time. So that'll be interesting.
Yes.
But before we move into the steps, I just really want to quickly set the table with one specific social science study. And I'm going to mention a few throughout the podcast. But this is sort of a way just to explain why happiness matters. Like, why should you care about being happy in the first place? Because I think a lot of people are probably content just living their life. And if they're not constantly thinking negative thoughts, that's probably fine. But one of the studies that really got me interested in this field to begin with is a baseball card study. So I'm a big baseball fan. You're a big baseball fan. What the researchers in this study did was they took a bunch of baseball cards. I believe it was the year 1952 that all of these players played. And they measured their smiles, and shockingly, it turned out that the type of smile that the player was giving correlated to their lifespan. And
what?
Yes. Okay. So this is, it's a really crazy thing. You can understand why I got so excited about this field when I started hearing about this stuff. Let me just say really quick. Always check your social science studies because there can be a lot of very confusing information, and clickbait websites love to use happiness studies to try to trick people into clicking them.
Okay. Yeah. I assure you, Alec, I am the host of the News AF podcast. I understand how clickbait headlines work.
That's right. So in this specific case, this is a great study. Very well done. Players who did not smile at all in their baseball card photos lived an average of 72.9 years. Players who had a partial smile, they lived an average of 75 years. And players with what we call a Duchenne smile, which is just like a glowing, huge smile, they lived an average of 79.9 years. And this is very significant, even if those spans seem like roughly far apart to some people. And obviously, there's a lot of factors at play because maybe these players were asked to pose. You don't exactly know what the context is as to how the pictures were being taken. But the fact that the correlation is there anyway is really interesting. The other thing, which is important to mention, is when it comes to this baseball card study, and this is unfortunately a problem with lots of very early studies about happiness, is that obviously all baseball players in this study were men. And we shouldn't assume that men and women always are going to experience happiness in the same way. Mm-hmm. Culture is very impactful when it comes to different things. There is, however, another study. It's a yearbook study. And this was all women that this study was done on. So this was, a high school yearbook. And I believe it's just a little bit over 30 years old now. So most of the women in this study are still alive. So we can't really trace what their lifespan is like. But we can see that so far, they've had happier marriages, better health, and greater life satisfaction over the course of their lives. And how a study like this works is these women are constantly, I think probably like once a year they ask, like, how's your life doing? Mm-hmm. And they sort of take it from there. So we're able to see two separate examples of studies that are just based on pictures that have been able to show that, you know, happiness matters, that it matters. Okay. Alex, at least a smile does.
Well, maybe the next step is we need to go back to all of the Survivor cast photos over the years and now start checking in with these survivors.
Actually, okay, so great point. When I think of a Duchenne smile, like the biggest smile that you can imagine, the kind of people that come to mind if people are trying to picture it are like a Sonia Christopher to me. Mm-hmm. Like just that overjoyed look on her face. And maybe a more modern example, like a Jeremy Collins. Mm-hmm. Type smile is what I think of when I yes. think about that. And yeah, as far as celebrities go, maybe like a Dick Van Dyke.
Okay. I'm looking this up. I want to make sure I'm a Duchenne smile. It can also yes. be described as smizing, smiling with the eyes.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever met somebody that just felt like they gave you a smile and they just like radiated joy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So here's the thing with, these studies, right? Because now I'm going to like peel back the curtain a little bit and explain what this is all about. So a lot of people have tried to point to these and say, okay, smiling makes you happier, or smiling makes you live longer, or however they want to determine it. That's not necessarily true. I think that the more likely solution here is that people who have those kind of wide smiles are probably like better off in general in their life. Like they're probably in a little bit better health.
It's why they're smiling.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they have more of a sense of confidence that their life is going to be working out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's important to mention, just because, you know, you maybe don't have that, kind of smile right now in your own life. Trust me, when you go back to my high school yearbook photo, I was not a happy kid.
No.
Things were, yeah, not
good. I don't remember smiling a lot in high school, Alec.
Yeah, I mean, even the yearbook photo that they tried to make me smile for, I couldn't even force it.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be like too much of a downer. Obviously, it's right now.
Yeah.
But, I guess. So the idea here is not that like smiling itself is impactful, but rather that when lots of good things are going on in your life, you're probably going to be happier. You're probably going to live longer. And that mm-hmm. shows in your smile. So yeah.
Okay. All right. So. The people that are smiling in old pictures, those people are, they're on the right track. Okay. So what do we do if we're not one of those people?
So, the thing about happiness studies is that I think that a lot of people in general kind of go the wrong way about it. They're thinking, oh, I'm going to be happier when I just get this one thing, sort of like how I was with my job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, if I just get this job, I'm going to be okay. If I just go on Survivor, I'm going to be okay. If I just have a relationship, I'm going to be okay. And the thing about people is that we have this funny thing called hedonic adaptation. And what this is basically the idea that once we get to a certain part of our life, we might get really excited about some big thing that happens, but ultimately we're going to settle back down to kind of a baseline. Mm-hmm. And that's just going to become what our being is. So, if people are not feeling that kind of happiness right now, I would encourage them. The first thing is kind of stop trying to think that just because I accomplish this next thing, that's going to be what's going to fix it. The truth is that most of good happiness research is just all about improving your general lifestyle and well-being. And then everything else starts to come with it, which is kind of a perfect transition point to our first tip today.
Okay.
So the first thing that I'm going to recommend people is to develop a routine for your well-being. Okay. So everybody has some kind of routine, right? Hopefully everybody like brushes their teeth every night.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you get a cup of coffee in the morning. You know, we have good routines and we have bad routines. Some things are like bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
When you're thinking about your general routine for the day,
yeah.
Think about what kind of healthy behavior you're incorporating right now and what you might like to incorporate. Because as this podcast goes on, I'm going to start to throw out a lot of ideas for people that they can work in. So this first tip is really just a starting point. It is, okay, keep this in mind. We're going to develop a routine for your well-being. And now here are going to be the types of things that maybe you should think about incorporating. So I think that Christian Kubicki was on your podcast.
He was.
Yeah, like fairly recently. And he was talking about how a guy like John Hedigan, who is a wrestler, he doesn't really think about working out, right? He just does it. It's part of his general routine. So the general idea is that getting into routine in the very beginning is going to be very difficult, but with practice, eventually it just becomes part of your day, just like brushing your teeth. So the easiest way to get started with something new is to try to incorporate it to routines that you already do absentmindedly.
Yeah.
So if you brush your teeth at the end of the night or in the morning, again, hopefully both, brush your teeth, people, you might be able to incorporate one of these things that I'm going to recommend into your lifestyle, and hopefully it will help.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when developing a routine, a good starting point is sort of where I started with my one thing a day with Eleanor Roosevelt, right? Try to think, I want to do...
Is one thing a day that scares you?
Okay, so the idea originally was that it was inspired by that. It was just going to be one thing that makes me happy. And as it turned out, one thing a day that's like progressing your happiness actually is kind of scary. So it turned out to be even more real than I thought it would at the time.
Yeah, this is very topical for me. I just got through an audiobook, Atomic Habits. Have you listened to that?
No, or check it out.
And I don't know the author's name, just off the top of my head. But basically, the idea is that in terms of like when we want to make changes about ourselves, that we shouldn't be looking at sort of like, I want to, the change I'm making is I'm going to have six pack abs. The change that we should be making is I'm going to do one sit up every day. And again, that's not actually, I believe that abs are actually made in the kitchen, Alex, but hypothetically, it's not the focusing on the massive change that you want to make is a recipe for failure. It's implementing the system that is going to help you become progressively better at what you are doing, just incorporating the habit of, being on, even if it's on the smallest angle upward, being on an upward trajectory as opposed to being on like a trajectory that is going down or not going towards that goal that you want to obtain.
That is exactly right. So if you are able to start off on this trajectory...
James Clear is the author of Atomic Habits.
Very good. If you're able to start off on this trajectory, you can start with just doing one tiny thing. Like maybe you do one sit-up today and then you do two sit-ups tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that about 80... I think it's about 80% of people fail on their New Year's resolutions is because... they want to kind of attack their change a little bit too fast.
Too aggressive.
Too aggressive. But also because January 1st is an arbitrary date. It feels good to say that I'm going to do this right now because it's a new year. But in actuality, you're not going to follow through unless you have made the internal commitment to yourself to make sure that it's actually going to work out. That can be any day. I don't recommend waiting to the New Year's. I say, as soon as you feel like you're ready to start making the change, like, let's go. Let's do it.
Alec, I love New Year's. I always like that, especially, going into this year. I mean, who knew? We said, okay, new year, new start. But I get very excited about New Year's because, one, in the typical Survivor season, usually January is a slow month for me, so I can really like focus on improvements or changes that I want to make. So I do love just the idea of like turning over the calendar, and on January 1st, you can't. I guess you're absolutely correct. You don't have to wait for anything, but I find that I have a lot of good habits that I start at the beginning of the year, and they fall off by the end of the year, and I feel like January 1st for me is like okay. New start. And I usually start off the years pretty strong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, symbolically, it's fantastic. And if you can follow through, it's still fantastic. If people are really able to get something out of it, I support it. Just remember, like 20% of people are going to be the ones that follow through and the 80% 80%. Mm-hmm. Others won't. So don't be one of those 80%.
Yeah.
Also start now.
You know, you know, January is a good time for me to start fresh after, in a typical year, two seasons of Survivor and a Big Brother season in the middle have beaten me down over the course of a year.
Yeah, well, now we're in the longest off season ever. The world is on off season.
Who knows? Who knows? You know how we're going to come out on the other side of this off season?
Yeah, exactly. So I want to like give people a little bit of a recommendation on exactly how to start off with mm-hmm. this one thing a day, if you are going to incorporate it to your routine, and that is 5-minute tasks. So there's this thing that I have kind of coined myself. I think of it as back of your mind syndrome, and that's the idea that kind of all of these things that compound in your mind, all of these chores that you know that you have to do, even if they're like small things, the more things that back up, the less you want to do it. So the easiest way to get started is to go for these little things that are just annoying that you've been putting off. Just like clean a corner of your bedroom, you know, call your bank about this thing that you've been meaning to talk to them about. If you can start doing those little things once a day, it's going to turn from a mountain of things into a hill. Because it can be so easy to be intimidated by this huge mountain of things and so overwhelming that you don't even want to do anything about it, you know?
Yeah. And the beauty of something like that is that even if you're like, oh, I don't have time to do that. Well, everybody has 5 minutes. If you just have 5 minutes to do that, and then once you get started, it's like, well, I'm already doing this. I might as well, you know, 5 minutes turns into 10 minutes, turns into 15 minutes. But you can, believe me, I am constantly like bargaining with my own self about like, I don't want to do this. Okay, well, just do, you could do it for 5 minutes. You could do it for 2 minutes. Just make sure that you know, every day, don't break the chain of like, okay, I'm the kind of person that is going to, you know, clean my room every day for 2 minutes. And by the way, I'm not that kind of person. That would be a good change for me to add into to be that person. But whatever your thing is that you're trying to do, anybody can do it, you know, once a day for X amount of times. If you want to do, you know, I can do one push-up a day, sure. And then, you know, one push-up is going to turn into more. But even if you don't feel like doing it, you could do that one. You could do your one push-up for a day.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And actually, now's a decent time to talk about time affluence since we're already on it. Basically, time affluence is the amount of perceived time that a person has. And obviously, there's some people who have like barely any time on their hands. I recognize that. But there's also people who have a lot more time on their hands than they realize they do. And a lot of that time ends up in like little pockets of the day that just turns into them kind of like looking at their phone and scrolling through things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trust me, we're going to get a lot into social media use and things like that later on. But I think that just a good general thing to remind yourself about time affluence is that try to take advantage of those little moments that you do have. Mm-hmm. It'll come up again a little bit later, but exactly what you're talking about, Rob. I think that's fantastic.
I want to step away for a moment before we get back to Alec and the next tip. While we're on the subject of self-development, which is one of my favorite things to talk about and listen to, I'm a big fan of audiobooks, but a great podcast to be listening to is a sponsor of this episode of Rob is a Podcast, and that would be the Jordan Harbinger Show, which is a podcast that you should definitely check out if you're interested in celebrity interviews and interviews with a bunch of experts in all sorts of different research areas that could give you practical advice. The show covers a wide range of topics through weekly interviews with heavy-hitting guests. There's a ton of episodes rooted in the business and tech space. I'd recommend listeners check out his conversation with Mark Cuban and Kevin Systrom, who is one of the co-founders of Instagram as well. Each episode is a conversation with a different fascinating guest. And when I say that there's something for everyone, I really mean it. In one episode, Jordan talks to a hostage negotiator from the FBI who offers techniques on how to get people to like and trust you, which sounds useful and disturbing at the same time, probably good for Survivor players. Another episode tells the story of a cinematographer who discovered a lost city in the jungle and made one of the most important archaeological finds of the century. Was that Coach? Did he have Coach on the podcast? The podcast covers a lot, but one constant is the ability to pull useful pieces of advice from the guests that you can use in your real life. I promise you, you'll find something useful that you can apply, whether it's an actionable routine change that boosts your productivity or just a slight mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Exactly the kind of stuff that we're talking about here in this podcast. So I enjoy the show. I think you will as well. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And let's get back to Alec with the next tip.
Let's move on to step number two.
Yes.
Or tip number two. Gotta catch myself. And that is going to be foster your social connections.
Yes.
Okay. So a lot of people that I talk to, they kind of will give me a response when I talk about this. Like, I'm an introvert. I don't want to talk to people. Like, I hate people. Yes. Stay away from the people. And introversion and extroversion are absolutely real things. Like, there are some people that get a lot of fulfillment from other people and others who don't. But everybody can benefit from some level of social interaction. Now, we happen to be in a time where the type of social interaction that we're used to is no longer exactly practical. So what we're really going to need to do here is reevaluate the way that we're being social. And the reason that we know that being social is so important is because of the largest study on happiness that's ever been done. And you may have heard of this. I'm assuming some listeners have probably heard of this. It's the Harvard Happiness Study. Sound familiar?
Not by name. Maybe tell me what it is, and maybe I've heard of it anecdotally.
That is fair enough. So this study started in 1939, and it gathered information from some Harvard College sophomores from that moment till the end of their lives. This study is actually still going on. In the origins of the study, unfortunately, they only did it on men, but have since added women to the study as well to try to make sure that they're getting an accurate representation of the data. With that said, the biggest takeaway from everything, and this is 456 test subjects, they measured people who had barely any money at all and then people who had plenty of money.
Like Akiva.
Yeah. So, and I want to make sure that I'm speaking correctly about this. So there were the Harvard College sophomores. They were the ones theoretically with money and education. And then there was a separate test group.
Got it.
The poor kids from Harvard. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So ultimately, the money that the people made in their lives made very little difference on how happy they were in the end. The thing that was the easily the strongest predictor of staying healthy and happy in life was having good relationships with other people. So this study is huge because it's lasted such a long time. And as many of these people were like toward the end of their lives, they weren't talking about, you know, the job that they were excited that they got. They were talking about, all of the memories that they have with people. And I think that's important to remember. And right now, especially, it's really important to foster those social connections with the people that you care about, even long distance, because those conversations still mean a lot. And I know that sometimes, you know, conversations can turn negative with how the world is. And maybe you can even get social exhaustion from talking to certain people who are sort of throwing that out there a lot. But, you know, finding those people who make you feel good and I guess appreciating them and not taking those moments for granted is important. Mm-hmm. And it's also important to note, this is not about the amount of friends that people have. This is about the strength of the relationships that they do have. So if you're not somebody who's super social and you don't have tons of friends, that's seriously okay. Just like one or two people that you can confide in, that can help. And now obviously not everybody is fortunate enough to have really great social relationships. Mm-hmm. So I really encourage people to try reaching out to communities that maybe have people that share your interests that you can kind of, you know, meet people that you can connect with on another level. And that can go a long way. Just like the community that you have created with Rob Has a Podcast patrons, you know, many of them really rely on that as their community now. And I think that's a really terrific thing.
Yeah, well, that's a nice thing that we are able to, you know, have built so many friendships with people from like all around the world who have a shared interest. That's all great. Alec, what if all of my social interactions come on podcasts? Is that, I feel like I'm doing it wrong.
Well, I mean, it definitely depends on what you're getting out of the podcast. I would encourage you savoring the conversations that you do have.
I have like, great talks with people, but I have very few talks that are outside of the construct of the podcast.
Well, if it makes you feel better, Rob, I feel like we're having a meaningful conversation between two
this
people.
Counts,
regardless
this
of
counts,
anything else.
Alec?
I sure think it does.
I'm getting a lot out of this. I just want to say that I feel like that. So I feel good about that. But then I sometimes you know, sort of like beat myself up over that I don't have any friends that I like socialize with or anything like that.
Yeah, but Rob, I think that you have a lot of friends that you connect with on a really deep level. Like
yeah.
Josh Wiggler alone, listening to you guys talk, that's not.
That counts.
I mean, sure, it's a podcast, but like you guys are really obviously like loving having a conversation mm-hmm. with each other. It's barely work to you. And I think that that kind of thing.
So I don't need to go have dinner with people or stuff like that.
You trying to get out of having dinner with a friend, Rob?
No, believe me, I would have dinner with my friend. Every time I try to have dinner with somebody that I feel like that they try to flake out on me.
You know, I would say the most important thing is to just be in tune with your own feelings. If you're feeling unfulfilled and like you need to have those kind of relationships, do it.
But I feel peer pressure. I feel peer pressure to have more friends outside of podcasting.
Oh, well, you got to throw that away. Peer pressure is obviously a very real thing. But, yeah. And you know, I'm sure that lots of people experience that as well. But
it doesn't bother me. I just feel like I'm doing something wrong.
You know, that's interesting because I think that a lot of the reason that people are unhappy is because they feel like they are doing mm-hmm. something wrong. When if there weren't these kind of like social requirements that we felt like we had to live up to, it may not be a problem in the first place.
Like,
but socially, we've been told.
I'm fine when the podcasting is over. I'm fine to do nothing and talk to nobody and just be alone. But I feel like that's like people are listening to this and then just saying like what a loser. You know, this guy does not get it.
You're getting more social interaction than like anybody. You have a right to take a couple steps back. Like I firmly believe that people should be taking time for themselves.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Don't you worry, Rob. I gotcha.
I beat myself up over that.
You shouldn't.
Okay. Thank you, Alec.
Shall we move on to tip number three?
Yes. Yes.
Awesome. Okay. So this one is going to be improve your physical health to improve your mental health.
Okay.
Who are listening to this podcast right now, they don't need me to tell them that exercise is a good idea,
mm-hmm.
right? So I mean, I'm going to skip right over like all of the benefits that exercise has. Like, you know, everybody knows that you should be doing it probably like 30 minutes, three times a day, I think is conventional wisdom. And instead more talk about
30 minutes, three times a day. That sounds like a lot.
Sorry, three times a week, three times a week.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, like, thank you for fact checking me.
Like, oh boy, I got to get out of this room more.
Where I want to tackle this, I want to talk about exercise as far as why is it so hard to actually get up and do it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a big reason for it is that people sort of go at exercise with the wrong motivation. And we sort of touched on this a little bit earlier. But you're thinking, okay, I need to work out. I want to lose weight. You know, I want to improve my body image. And maybe a month happens, you've worked out and you feel like you haven't made as much progress as you're hoping that you will.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to exercise and all kinds of improvements to your physical health, you really, ideally, should be doing it for yourself because it's going to make you feel better, not because it's going to make you look better or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I'm going off on a big tangent here, but there's a great Twilight Zone episode from back in the day.
Yes.
Yeah. Called Beauty of the Beholder, I think is right. You know, it's fine. I'm going to spoil it.
Feel free to spoil Twilight Zone episodes. That's fine.
Basically, there's a woman in the beginning who's got a face bandage on.
Yes.
And the whole time you're sort of seeing her struggle with, oh, she's so ugly. And,
yes, I know. I know it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know it. And
she's had some sort of a cosmetic reconstructive surgery and that she is like concerned that she could be disfigured.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole time you're just waiting. It's like, did this surgery work? Did it help? And then at the end, you see the reveal. They take off the bandages and she's beautiful, but nobody else in the world is. And yes. They all look at her like she's a monster, which yes. is how she's always felt. Because beauty really is a social construct. Like, they all have pig faces in that episode. So just remember, like, this is easier said than done. Like, let's be honest. We have been, like, socially told our entire lives that beauty matters. Mm-hmm. It's been thrown to us in marketing, and it's not going to go away. Like, I would love to, like, scream it from the rooftops if I could, that it really, really, really is a construct. And I really hope that people can sort of, like, dig a little bit deeper and remember that this is about, like, your mental health more.
Yeah. So what you're saying here is that you're not saying that the reason physical fitness is important is for the aesthetic reasons. There are mental health reasons that being physically active is important.
Exactly.
Okay.
Being physically active is great. Coming at it with the right motivation is very, very important. And if you come at it with the wrong motivation, it's going to be a lot harder to stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of applies to diet too. And look, I'm not a dietitian, to be honest. Like, I'm not going to try to recommend too many things here, but I can tell you soda, really bad. If you can start cutting soda out, that'll probably improve your energy level a lot. Fast food, also really bad. So I was a really, really bad fast food eater for a while. And when this whole quarantine started, me and my girlfriend had been doing a really good job of, like, cooking. So we decided to spoil ourselves for the first time and go get some fast food. And having not had it in a month, it, like, destroyed my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing when I, like, drank a can of soda after not having touched it in a year.
Yeah.
So these things that we get very used to and our bodies get used to, they're really bad for us, but we stop realizing it because it's so much a part of our routines.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm on diet, I should briefly touch on alcohol too. People are kind of joking, oh man, like everybody's gonna leave the quarantine like alcoholics. And it's kind of true. Like, we really have to be careful about that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not really a joke. I think definitely set some rules to yourself. Make sure that you're not having more than a certain amount every week.
Yeah.
Because that is a very legitimate risk right now, especially.
Yeah. And I think a lot of this, you know, people know, you know, what's healthy for you, what's not healthy for you. But I think that what you're really keying into is that, you know, sure, everybody knows fast food, you know, a burger is not the most healthy choice. You know, don't drink to excess, you know, don't drink too much soda. But that in addition to the physical, reaction your body has, there's also, you know, it slows you down in terms of, like, the things that you want to do to ultimately, be on that journey towards, you know, improving are going to be harder the more that you end up, you know, slowing yourself down by putting things into your body that are not fuel for, you know, progress in your body. So basically, the more you drink, the more you eat bad food, the more sluggish you'll feel, the more tired you'll feel, the less you're going to be able to get up off the couch and spend that 1 minute cleaning your room because you're going to feel like it less, as opposed to if you made a decision earlier that would be more beneficial towards keeping you in line with that other goal you're trying to accomplish.
That is exactly right. And you can start working on these kind of things the same way, very slowly. If you drink soda every day, just try starting with every other day. You know, you might start to notice an improvement with your energy level and just take it from there. I'm a big proponent of just, like, slowly improving things and mm-hmm. not trying too hard too fast. So the other thing
that
I want to make
sure... The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. I believe that was from Survivor China.
That's beautiful.
Yes.
My brother's running coach back in the day told him the hardest part of every run is the first step.
That's right.
Also, and you know, I still use that. That's good.
The hardest part of every podcast is hitting record.
Yeah.
Then everything else that comes after that. I've never said that before.
Yeah, you always say, like, make it 10 episodes, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just get started. Yeah. That's the advice that I give to podcasters is, like, people are like, I got to think of this. I got to think of this. I'm like, just make one. just make one, and then it's done, and then you can move, on from there. Yeah, that is good advice. Where getting started on something.
It's good advice in life too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, it's okay if you suck at some of this stuff in the beginning. You know, with practice, you'll get better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want to make sure that I touch on one other thing about physical health before we pass on to the next thing, which is sleep. So
if
I could tell everybody like one thing that is absolutely going to help you, it would be to sleep better. And, you know, we can see this in all kinds of science. But of course, it's easier said than done. There's all sorts of people who are thinking to themselves, well, I would love to sleep better, but I have insomnia. Mm-hmm. I have all these other kinds of
kids. Yeah. I have to go to work. Right.
Yeah. Obviously, your individual situation is going to vary vastly from other people, probably. But there are some general types of things that I can recommend for people to get better sleep. To tie in Survivor really quick, a Survivor buff is a fantastic sleep mask, mm-hmm. legitimately.
Yeah.
If you feel like you need to cut the sun out, you know, put a Survivor buff over if you have one.
Especially this time of year.
Yeah, that's right. Makes me feel better. More specifically, I think the biggest thing is to check yourself out of everything else for 30 minutes
mm-hmm.
Before you go to bed. Now, this is going to be probably a good segue into social media here, but we spend a lot of time on our phones, and a lot of people have a tendency to have the very last thing they do every day to just be sitting there on their phone, hoping that they can fall asleep soon or that they get tired. And that's really, really bad for your sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only are you probably not going to sleep as long, you're also not going to get quality sleep. Just giving yourself those 30 minutes to do something else that is completely like outside of the world. You know, especially right now when there can be so many different things that are occupying our headspaces, just try reading a book if you can. Or, you know, if you're a meditation person, you know, feel free to try to meditate for some of that time. Even like starting off with brushing your teeth and finding different ways. Ooh, the best one of all, which we'll get to later. I don't want to get too far ahead, but having a journal is another really good last thing to do before you go to bed. So.
I could think of some other things, Alec, but we'll go with the journal as a number one thing to do right before you go to bed.
Cool. Specifically a gratefulness journal.
Yes.
But before we get to all that, let's move into social media here.
Yes.
Because I think that this is probably the thing that people are the most interested in hearing about.
Yes.
Simply because pretty much everybody you ask, they're like, I feel like I use my phone too much. I feel like I'm on social media too much. I feel like social media is making me feel bad. You know, I don't like the things that I'm seeing, and it's driving me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, props that people have the awareness to know when they are not feeling good. You know, I think that's the first step for a lot of things is check in with yourself, see how you're feeling about this. So obviously, if you are feeling that way, it's probably a good idea to try to curb some of that. This step, however, is going to be called manage your phone use, because a lot of the issues that people report are actually a lot bigger than social media. It has to do with our phones and kind of screen time in general to some extent. So if you're somebody who, you know, you maybe don't use a lot of social media, but you have this stupid little game that you have on your smartphone, and any time that you have that little pocket of time, I guess.
Yeah.
You immediately go and you play, I don't know, what are people playing nowadays? Flappy Bird? How old is that?
Flappy Bird is old. I don't know exactly what the new... what if you're playing Animal Crossing? Does that count?
Ooh, okay. Actually,
that's not a phone, really, though. That's a Switch.
So it is a Switch. It involves screen time. Animal Crossing has actually been really good for a lot of people.
Oh, okay.
Here's the thing. Screen time itself is not bad. It is how we use the screens and how we feel about using the screens mm-hmm. that can be bad. If you're sitting there and you're having an amazing time and your mental health feels fine, like that's great. Like, if you're really enjoying your TV show, you don't have to feel bad about enjoying that TV show, like, by any means. The thing that you have to be careful of is, have I been binging something for 4 hours and am I no longer feeling good about what I'm watching?
Or podcasting about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, true. So, you know, it's not all social media exactly. It's certainly possible to have too much screen time, but that's also because of how we personally are feeling about how we're using it.
So I feel like that this is a really good point, that there's two issues here. You know, one, just the act of like staring at the phone, holding the phone, it makes you more tired. And also that the, you know, dopamine hits that you get from like refreshing your feed or playing the game, that also has an effect on your happiness. Is that an oversimplification?
I mean, it's always going to make a little bit of a difference, especially because when people
it gets addictive.
Yeah, that's when people are doing those kind of things, they're not actually focusing on what they're doing most of the time. If they were, they wouldn't be hating it as much. The fact is, their mind is wandering and probably going to other places, and they're doing it as a form of habit. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to bet that if people right now were to open up their phones and they would delete some of the apps that they're using all the time, especially the social media ones.
What should I delete? What do I need to get rid of?
Get rid of Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
No, I need Facebook.
That's what everybody says.
I need Facebook, but to be fair, I really only go on Facebook and go into the Rob is a Podcast patron groups. I mean, that's really it. I don't spend time in my newsfeed.
Yeah.
I don't use it for anything else.
And that is a really good point. I think that everybody
and Messenger. People send me Facebook messages.
Yeah, I keep Messenger on my phone because I think of that like texting, like people might be trying to get a hold of me.
Yeah.
And again, I really like pinpoint on the apps that you yourself feel like you're struggling with.
But Facebook newsfeed, they could turn that off tomorrow.
Yeah, for real. you know, the thing about all these apps is that they all kind of affect people differently depending on who you are. Right. So maybe it's going to benefit some people to get rid of Twitter. Some people it's going to benefit them to get rid of Facebook. The fact is, simply having these accounts does not actually make people unhappy generally. Mm-hmm. It's how they're using their time. So there is a correlation between high levels of social media use and depression.
Yes.
It is a very real correlation. We need to remember that there's two possibilities here. It could be that social media is causing depression. It could also mean that people who have depression are just much more likely to find themselves trapped in social media. Mm-hmm. And either
could
way,
could be a little column A, a little column B.
Yeah, probably. And you know, I think that regardless of which one of those things it is, it's probably a good idea to start thinking about using it a little bit less. Mm-hmm. If you feel like you can't delete it from your phone, then I would say many phones have like screen limits.
Yeah,
and you can actually set it up.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Can I give some tips here in this area? One thing that I found and I've been a Twitter user for 10 plus years now at this point, what I think is a very useful feature that a lot of people don't take advantage of are Twitter lists, where you can say, I know a lot of people say like, look, hey, I'm just on Twitter because I need to get the news or sports or whatever sort of like thing that they are looking to do. Make a list that just has those accounts that you feel like that those are the pertinent accounts. So if I've got a minute to scroll through Twitter, I want to know what's happening in the world. I'm just going to go into my list and look at what's news or the people that are very important. Just look at your list. Look at your mentions if people are talking to you. And then a whole bunch of the rest of Twitter is you don't need to know every person on Twitter's opinion on every single thing. Because chances are that there will be lots of opinions that are not good opinions, Alec, and they will make you, and if they will make you upset, you don't need to know every single person's opinion, because a person who has a bad opinion may not have a filter between the bad opinion, Twitter. I got to get this out into the world. You just don't need to know it.
Yeah, you also don't have to see the same negative news story 20 times. You can see it once, mm-hmm. and that'll probably make you informed.
Right. And you don't necessarily need to know every single person's opinion about said news story.
Yeah, definitely don't have to know every single
person. Because I think that, honestly, like, and I think this is a real thing. The more time you spend with your own thoughts and opinions, good, the more time you spend on other people's thoughts and opinions, bad.
Yeah, because that's how you turn positive mind wandering into negative mind wandering, which can have some very negative effects.
Yeah. And just, you know, spending time with your own thoughts, I think, super productive. Spending time with other people's thoughts, not as good use of a time.
You got it. And listen, I recognize that probably most listeners are not going to pick up their phones right now and delete those apps.
But I think making a list of the things that, okay, these are the important, these are the accounts I'm on here to check. Okay, that's my list. That's who I'm here to see. And you don't need to see every single person that's going on that you follow from whatever year.
Yeah, it's a start. And for a while, Rob, I tried to do a thing with Facebook because I had deleted the app, but I kept thinking to myself, like, oh man, but there's this photo that I'm just trying to like pull up for this funny story really quick. And I just want to have it on the app so that I can bring it up. So I re-downloaded the app and I would do that. And then slowly but surely, I started to fall into the same pattern. It was there. I started checking it again. So I just at some point decided, you know, if I can't keep myself in check, then I'm going to need to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. So I think your list idea is fantastic and people should try it. But if they start to feel like they're not actually able to stick with it, then maybe it's not a bad idea to consider getting rid of it. Mm-hmm. You know, there is one more great recommendation that I have to help manage your phone use in general. And that is something called the Forest app. Forest, and I really recommend this to people. I found it kind of recently, and you know, maybe I can tweet the link out at the end so that people can find it as well. What the Forest app is it's like a timer where you are essentially planning a virtual tree, and you can set this timer for however long you want. You can set it for 30 minutes up to like 2 hours if you want. And the second that you plant this tree, if you open up your phone, you're going to see the tree that you're planting. But if you leave that screen, then your tree is going to die.
You have to watch it die in front of your eyes?
Well, it'll die outside of your eyes, and then you'll get back to it and you'll realize that it's dead.
Oh my God.
but it has been very helpful to me because...
I mean, maybe would it be more effective if it was a person? Not a real person.
Oh, you mean you think that people would be more likely to stick with it if they were killing a person?
Well, just to go back to the Atomic Habits audiobook, they talked about how they were saying that somebody had proposed that the launch codes for nuclear weapons would need to be, they should be like implanted in the chest of like a vital, like a White House assistant. And if the president wanted to, the nuclear launch codes, the president would have to just in cold blood kill somebody to get the so that would bring home the immediacy of like this is what if you want the nuclear codes, this is what you have to do. You have to watch this person ultimately. I mean, a tree is, you look, trees are nice, but you know,
I guess you're onto something. Let's make an app and we can watch a person die in front of our very eyes. That sounds great.
That'll keep people off the phone. I don't need to see that.
Listen, all right, before we go that far, I think
maybe there's something else. Maybe there's something else. Maybe it's like maybe some sort of I don't know, maybe something some work of art will be destroyed.
Great. Okay, we can kill art. Fantastic. As if
Alec, I'm sorry. I feel like I'm ruining this.
I'm having such a great time, okay. Rob. Don't apologize for a second. But I will double down on my Forest app because the planting the tree is hard. It's not so much about the guilt that you feel about watching the tree die. It's more that people don't even realize how much they check their phones. So they'll be shocked by how many times they open it up absentmindedly and see the tree there again.
I see. Forest app.cc looks like the URL for that.
Okay, perfect. I think that there's a... And full disclosure, the Forest app is like $1.99. I think it's like the best $1.99 that I ever spent. But there is another one that's free. I have not used it, but I assume that it has ads. I like it without ads.
Yeah, I use something on my computer. I have a Chrome extension called BlockSite, which I use to block out any sort of like social media when I have to actually sit and concentrate and do work on the laptop.
I mean, that's a good one. Anything that you can do to start to like push against these apps that you're checking absentmindedly or websites, whatever they are, I think is definitely a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that we can't help ourselves. Look, that it's very hard. The siren song of social media calls us and you're not even thinking about it. And you pick up the phone and it's like, all right, let me check this. Like sometimes you need something to say,
Mm-hmm. Well, because a lot of the time that, you know, before social media was around, we would spend talking just finding other ways to spend our time is now being spent like just trying to distract ourselves that we can move to the next thing. Mm-hmm. So, I just want to emphasize again, like social media itself, like just having the app itself or an account is not the worst. It's really just when you get trapped by it and really get sucked into it that it becomes a problem. Mm-hmm. Social media is kind of a new way to interact with people also in a lot of ways. Like it's very valuable right now as a way to kind of get people together also. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, there's a lot of parents that are probably expressing concerns like, oh, my kid uses social media way too much. What do I do? I'm not parents, so maybe if you have anything that you've tried or maybe ideas that you have to try in the future, then you could share that because I think a lot of people could benefit from that kind of help. Mm-hmm. Do you have any ideas
of what parents can do with social media? You know, my boys aren't old enough that my biggest problem is that my boys want to play like a million different iPad games and YouTube videos, and I feel like that is also very addictive and not good for them because it's not like a lot of educational stuff they're watching. They're watching really the dumbest stuff possible. So I know, and actually my wife is actually a lot more vigilant about trying to police that, where, you know, for me it's like hey, I'm actually like I have to also get stuff done also. So what's been especially hard as a parent right now with the lack of structure around schools and camps and stuff like that, so the kids have had a lot more exposure to the screen time, and I really have not come up with a effective game plan on how to combat that, and that's really been more of a Nicole focus.
That's fair. And I think that an important thing for people to remember is that the current generation that's growing up, this is going to be the first generation that has grown up with social media in their lives the entire time. Mm-hmm. So it's quite possible that it ends up affecting them differently because there's not a lot of data that we have about that generation. Mm-hmm. We're largely subjects of our social world and the kind of social experiences that we've grown up with. So it's easy for us to say, as people who experienced a world without social media, that it's really, really bad and it's always going to be bad. But, you know, there are certain benefits, and I just hope that maybe some of the good ones come out. But,
and
yeah,
just also for right now, I do think that there's like we're in a little bit of a still trying to come to grasp with like, OK, this isn't real life. This is not going to be the way that things are necessarily forever. And I'm sure that that's probably also the way that a lot of people have looked at. OK, yeah, I'm not eating great right now, but because this is, you know, we're in this extended circumstance. But as the longer it goes on in this condition, the more we have to sort of like grasp with, OK, you know, maybe it's not OK just to say like, oh, it's just for right now. We have to like be mindful of like bad habits that are happening to us and with our families in this period of time as well.
Yeah, right. I mean, right now, I think that everybody is sort of trying to figure out new routines that are going to work for them. And, you know, maybe some of them are healthy, good routines, and some of them are things that you feel like you're just killing time. But I do think that in the end, there's going to be a lot that we learn from this about ourselves. And I hope that people take the good things that they learn and maybe leave out the bad when all is said and done.
Okay. All right.
So, all right, let's move on to the next tip, which is don't worry too much about money. So I've got a question for you, Rob.
Yes.
If you had to guess, total dart throw, how much money was spent on lottery tickets in the year 2015?
Wow. How much money I spent? $5 billion.
All right. try about 14 times that.
Wow.
$70.5 billion yes. were spent on the lottery in yes. the year 2015. For perspective, that is more than books, music, movie tickets, sports tickets, and video games combined.
Yeah.
So what does this tell us? People are obsessed with the idea that if they had all this money, that it was going to make that it would make them happier. Right. And so much to where the government has basically legalized gambling to just say, hey, throw your money at us. Mm-hmm. Barely anybody's going to win. So, I mean, it goes without saying that playing the lottery is probably not a great idea. Not only because you're probably not going to win, but because it's very unlikely to actually make you as happy as you think it will.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it's pretty common if you asked a random person on the street, hey, do you think that money makes you happy? I think most of them would say probably no, because that just feels like the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is actually yes, to some extent.
Yeah.
So money makes us happy for as long as we can continue to meet our basic needs. But it's a weak correlation. So I would probably not do a very good job being able to randomly predict how happy somebody is based on their income level, unless they made a very, very tiny amount, because that makes life very, very difficult to live.
Yeah, I've seen studies like this, that there's a certain like threshold of money makes you happier to a certain point, and then after that there's not a big difference, right?
Yeah, guess what, Rob, I have that number.
Yes, what is that number?
So the annual income where there starts to be like zero correlation as yeah. far as making anybody happier is $75,000 a year.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, that's way more than I make, you know, without giving away too yeah. much.
And $75,000 a year in different parts of the country is actually, there's probably, you know, some degree of it's up or down based on where you live.
Yeah. And I mean, keep in mind that inflation will adjust that.
Yes. Like, and if you're single or if you have a family, yeah.
Sure. Like there's going to be different things that are probably going to change what it is. But the basic idea is, as people start to make more money, they do start to get a little bit happier on average because it starts to get easier to do certain things.
But and more maybe, money, more problems, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so some of your problems start to go away. You're feeling good. And once people reach the 75,000 mark, they expect that that's going to stay the same. But it doesn't. And then it creates a thing where a lot of people who do start to make more than that start to feel like they're at a little bit of a crisis because they don't realize why they aren't getting happier anymore mm-hmm. by getting that kind of money, which is why something like the lottery can actually be really bad for somebody to win. There's lots of stories of lottery winners whose lives are definitely not better because they won. You know, I think if we're thinking about Survivor winners, this most recent season, something that was really interesting to me was that Ben, at around the final five, was willing to go home for integrity, despite mm-hmm. the fact that there was $2 million on the line. He had already experienced what it was like to win $1 million, and maybe he felt like his life didn't change quite as much as he expected. And it was a little bit more freeing to let that go. Granted, the specific situation which led to that was a little bit more complex,
mm-hmm.
But I did think to myself at that moment, like, you know, I bet that a lot of these winners, yeah, $1 million is life-changing, but a lot of them went on to keep doing the same things. Adam Klein, who I'm really inspired by in general, he's saved almost all that money, which I think is a great idea because he sort of gets the whole idea that all of this money is not necessarily going to make him happier. There's a really cool study from Sonia Lubomirsky, who I mentioned earlier, and she ran a study, or her research group ran a study, I should say, that sort of asked people how much money they made and how much they thought would make them happy. And people who made about $30,000 a year, they were thinking $50,000. $50,000 mm-hmm. is how much I think I could reasonably feel good about to be happy. Then there, I mean, and they did this for all kinds of price ranges. But what they found is that at an average of 1.4% per dollar, that number started to go up. So people who had $100,000, they said that they would be happy when they made about $250,000,
mm-hmm.
which to me is like an insane amount of money that I feel like I'm never going to need. But it just goes to show how wrong our minds are at predicting what's going to make us happy. And this doesn't just come into play for money. Like this comes into play for like getting a new job or getting into a relationship. There's all these things that are like life achievements that we think are going to be the be all end all that's going to solve our happiness problem. And as it turns out, like a lot of the changes are actually a little bit smaller than that. So I find all of the money research really, really interesting. And I really want to hammer it home to people that, you know, even if you don't make close to $75,000, you don't have to be making a ton to feel good. And obviously, if you're like really in debt, I recognize that it's very, very hard to claw your way back up from a poor financial situation.
Yeah.
And clearly, you know, I think I said it already, but people who are barely making any, it's going to be very, very difficult.
I think that just, and to really reiterate that for this conversation, for people who are sort of like looking at the financials of like, boy, there's this career that I really am not enjoying, but I'm making $60,000 a year, but I really would love to be doing this other thing. I think that this would be much more of a rewarding experience, but it's a $45,000 a year position to do that. You know, I can't leave all that money on the table. That ultimately, while the money is real, that you will be much happier. There won't be a big difference in your happiness based on the money. It's really that your happiness is more affected by doing the work that you find more fulfilling, as opposed to the thing that you feel like is soulless but might be more money.
That's exactly right. Make the change, but plan the change. Make sure that you have put the steps in motion to where you can comfortably feel good about how your financial situation is going to drop. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, regardless of all of the things that I'm going to share here today, it's one thing to know all of these facts. It's another thing to actually, like, you know, follow through on them. Mm-hmm. It's easy for us to say, based on all this research, it very clearly shows you that money is not necessarily going to give you everything that you think that you want. But yet when you tell somebody, "Ooh, I'm going to go from 60,000 to 45,000, it's very hard to still change that core value that they already have, even if they know it.
And I just also want to say that somebody could be listening to this and say, "Oh, well, easy for you to say." But so if it's that you need to stay at the job, that's the higher paying job, find a way to incorporate the thing that you love into your free time, instead of just having it as a like, "Well, I could do that, but it's less money," or this, then stay at the job that is less rewarding but better paying, and find ways to incorporate this thing, this passion that you have that could be a great source of happiness for you, into your spare time, even if it's in some small way that you play the guitar for 1 minute a day, or whatever it is, this thing that you feel like that you love doing so much. Make sure, you know, find a place to incorporate that habit into your daily or weekly routine.
That is exactly right. And I really think it's important to, as I say, diversify your portfolio. Try to start to make little pieces of progress in a lot of different areas, not just one. And I know it doesn't have to be at work. It can be, you know, strumming at a guitar, or possibly like improving your exercise. And if you are somebody who's in a situation where you feel like, you know, there's just no way that your job is going to be able to change, I will recommend a terrific TED Talk, which is called The Happy Secret to Better Work. And it's a positive psychologist, so he's in the field. His name is Sean Aker, and it's one of the funniest TED Talks I've ever seen. And it also leads me into the sixth tip that I'm going to recommend today, which is to practice gratefulness every single day. And I want to say, if there is one thing, one specific tip, the tangible thing that I'm going to try to insist that people start to do, it is going to be to write down three things that you are grateful for every single night. And that goes into the gratefulness journal that I talked about before. Mm-hmm. So why is this? So go ahead.
I'm dying to know, because I feel like that I incorporate most of what we've talked about already into a lot of my routine. Nobody has more routine and habit than me. Every day here is exactly the same, Alec. And I really do a good job, I think, of structuring those days to some degree, with mostly positive habits. But this is the one thing so far that I feel like that I do not do, and I've been hesitant to incorporate.
Okay, well, this is great then. So in Sean Aker's TED Talk, he talks about a lot of things, but he talks about specifically one of his research groups and how they were able to track people having a positive change significantly in their happiness in just an average of 21 days of starting to practice gratefulness. And there have been a lot of studies that have supported this kind of thing. And you may wonder, like, why does this work so well? So have you ever heard what I will call a myth of people sort of telling you, oh, all you have to do is think more positively and then things are going to get better for you?
Mm-hmm.
So that is somewhat true. Positive thinking can make people feel better. But when you talk to a person who has experienced nothing but negativity for a really long time, telling them that if they think positive, that things are going to get better is just a little bit insulting.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to actually think positively, it's not as simple as turning on a light switch. It's not like, you know, you tell me, Rob, hey, Alec, if you start thinking more positively, then things will be great. I'll be like, great, let me flip on the light switch in my brain, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden everything is going to work out. It takes practice to be able to transition your thinking into being positive. And that is why gratefulness is important, because you may, at least in the beginning, be forcing yourself to write things down. Maybe you really don't feel like you're that grateful for things in general. Like, you don't feel like you're that grateful of a person. But the more that you start to do this, the more that you will start to notice in your regular life that there are things to be grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
And even when you're not realizing that this kind of effect is happening, it is. And you slowly start to have an appreciation for life, I think, in a way that maybe you didn't before.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to illustrate this with a personal story. My girlfriend and I think it's probably been about a year now. We went to go climb Mount Mansfield in Vermont. It's the tallest mountain in Vermont. And we were really excited to do it. We felt like we had roughly prepared, but full disclosure, we did not prepare nearly enough. Okay, so we got there. The park ranger didn't really give us proper warning that the path that we were thinking about embarking on might be a little bit over our speed. And we worked really hard. We climbed that mountain for a couple hours, and it always felt like it was closer to the end than it actually was. And for the most part, we were able to manage it. We were doing pretty good. We still didn't properly prepare. I don't think that we had the correct shoes for it or anything. We met some nice hikers that helped us just in general get into the right mindset as to what we were about to tackle. But when we got to literally the very, very last part of this climb, everything else hadn't been too bad. The last step that we have to take is right over the side of a mountain. And we look at it, and it's terrifying because it looks like if we try to do this and we slip, then that's the end of the road. This was a really scary experience. So we sat there and we thought, okay, what are we going to do? Do we try to call for help? Do we try to do it anyway? We got to figure something out. And ultimately, we just decided that we were going to wait. And we would hope that somebody would get there because we'd seen a lot of other climbers on the route. And I'd say about 20 minutes passed and we still hadn't seen anybody. Thankfully, eventually a couple did show up. And they were two of the nicest people that I've ever met in my entire life. We said, hey, we need some help. And they jumped into action. They showed us physically, hey, look, this climb isn't as bad as it looks. All you have to do is put your foot here. And they demonstrated it for us. It looks scary. It looks scary because it's off the side of the cliff, but this is not any more difficult than anything else you've been doing. And they sat there behind us and spotted us so that we could safely get up to the mountain. Now, I learned two things. First of all, hiking without the proper equipment and the right experience is probably not a very good idea. We should have been safer.
Got that.
But I also learned that you can't climb every mountain alone, and you shouldn't climb every mountain alone. And it didn't give us any hit to our pride at all that we had been helped, that we didn't do this by ourselves. All we were was sheerly grateful for these people that had, as far as we had seen it in that moment, changed our lives. And when we got back down to like the little ski lodge area, we had a sandwich, and I will never forget how that sandwich tasted, because for a small moment, I wasn't sure if I was ever going to eat again. Like,
what sandwich?
Oh my God. It was the best chicken sandwich with a balsamic aioli.
Yeah.
And the waitress had given us
like a chicken breast.
Yeah. And the waitress had given us hot water, just to drink hot water because we were cold. And the way that water felt, and I'm a big tea drinker. Yeah. It was just water, no tea in it at all. I was just overwhelmed with, you know, relief, but also gratefulness and happiness. And I think that a lot of couples, yeah. they would have gone through this hike and they would have been arguing the whole time.
Oh, yeah. I could relate. I could relate. Yeah.
But they would have been thinking to themselves,
why did you say that? Why did you take us on this? You should have known that we didn't have the equipment.
That's right. And, you know, we could have not run into super nice people who helped us, but we did. And I will never be more grateful for that experience that we had, regardless of the fact that we probably shouldn't have done it to begin with. And these are the kind of stories of gratefulness that I try to like encourage people to remember. These people that really made a small difference that ended up making a big difference to you. Mm-hmm. You know, and this can be all sorts of things. So I wanted to kind of do a little exercise here. I was going to tell you three things that I am grateful for, Rev. Yeah. Sister Nino, yes. and then I'm going to ask you three things that you are.
Oh boy.
So first of all, I'm obviously incredibly thankful for these for this couple at Mount Mansfield that yeah. helped us out that day. Number two, there's this girl at our local grocery store who loads the groceries into my car every time I visit, so that we can have like contactless delivery for the current mm-hmm. situation.
Yeah.
And she's so incredibly nice every time that her joy radiates even when she has a face mask on, even though you can't see her smile. She just really improves my day every time that I get to stop by. So, you know, I'm very grateful for her. And I'm also very grateful to you, Rob Sesternino, for allowing me this platform to talk in the first place and for being somebody who I've looked up to and have just had such an admiration for and such a love for all of the content that you put out. It's made a big difference in my life. And, you know, I that is something to be grateful for.
Well, Alec, thank you very much. I really am grateful for all your contributions today. So though I have the challenge of thinking about three things that I'm grateful for, and I feel like, you know, a real challenge between like the minute and the sort of like the big picture stuff. But
minute is fine.
Well, let me start with, so last year, back in the spring of 2019, we went to Philadelphia for our live know-it-alls in Philadelphia, and I had a flight where I was at the Philadelphia airport, and I was like, it was the day of the Amazing Race premiere, had the reality star Amazing Race premiere had premiered the night before. And I was like frantically trying to download this episode so I could watch it on the plane so that I would be able to, you know, have that with me. And so I had a million cables out and everything. And then my flight was boarding and I was just trying to like get the file to download before I got onto the plane. And I was in a little bit of a rush and I got the file downloaded, boom, closed my bag and then got onto the plane. And then I was about to board the plane when a woman comes running up to me and says, "Sir, is this your phone?" And I almost would have boarded that plane to Philadelphia without my iPhone on me. I really, could you imagine? I would have been completely just distraught about that, not only just losing my phone, but I would have, you know, got to the airport, had no way to you know, communicate with anybody, like I have no phone. So this stranger, this is always stuck with me, that she could have just seen the phone and been like, you know, but she went around looking, trying to find the owner of this phone. I have incredible gratitude for this woman.
That's wonderful.
That was nice. That was very, very, that I love her. She was great. So I have great gratitude to her. I have incredible gratitude to the people that allow me to be able to do this, you know, quote unquote work. I mean, that I've been doing it for so long, it's hard for me to imagine doing anything else. But, you know, I am super fortunate in that I am able to, you know, really be able to construct a routine, and I am such a creature of habit and routine, but that there are very few other, you know, paths I could have taken in my life that I would be able to be in this situation where I'm able to, you know, practice every routine or most of the routines that I want to be able to you know, to construct my day a certain way to be able to maximize, you know, my potential for what I'm trying to accomplish. And so I am super grateful for, you know, just all of the opportunities that have come my way and all the people who have, you know, allowed me to be able to get to do what I do. And that is includes like the patrons and all of the listeners and the contributors and even the first lady of podcasting, who at many different times along the way could have said, like, could you get a real job at some point? Like, what is this? What is this that you want to, that you want to do?
And she never, was there for you all the way.
Yeah. She never questioned the lunacy of what I was trying to accomplish. So that I'm also very grateful for. And can I say that? I mean, I don't know if this is on point or not, but that the fact that, you know, like this terrible time that we're going through right now with everything, with this pandemic, that at least that this has happened at a time where so many things are possible for us to be able to remain in communication with each other. I mean, you know, had this pandemic occurred 20 years ago, 15 years ago, could anybody have, you know, continued to have like any shred of normalcy in their lives in terms of like communication, getting groceries, that so many different things, that at least, you know, we're at this point where we are still like, while we have lost physical touch, that I am grateful that, you know, at least that we have things like the internet to be able to, you know, have stayed in contact to do all these different things remotely that we would not have been able to even think, you know, like from the super, you know, small to like to texting and FaceTime to, you know, telemedicine and all these things. So, you know, can I be just a, like to find a silver lining in, you know, that, at, you know, this terrible time that we're going through, at least, you know, it's happening to us at a time when we're, you know, at least more interconnected than we've ever been before.
You sure can. And you, Rob Cesternino, just reframed your thoughts.
Yes. Okay. So this is what I should do. So that how detailed do I need to be with the gratefulness journal?
You do not have to be detailed at all. These were some really specific examples, which I think are just a good way to make listeners kind of know what I'm talking about. But you can write down that you were grateful for Survivor Season 40 being fantastic if you want to. Mm-hmm. You can start with your classic Thanksgiving speech. I'm thankful for, you know,
yes,
parents or relatives or whoever made me feel good.
Can I ask you a question, Alec? So do
I would love that.
Do you do this as a personal practice, or do you do this with your girlfriend? Do you talk about it with each other? Because I feel like that if I ideally would love to bring this to my wife, but I feel like if she's not in the top three for the day, I feel like she's not going to be very grateful.
So how we do it, Rob, is we do each do the activity. We worked it into our teeth brushing rotation,
smart.
Basically. So
that's smart.
Yeah, so you finish brushing your teeth, you go over, you write in the journal. But we don't share them with each other. So it's a personal journal that you do for yourself.
Okay, because I could see a scenario where I'm working on my journal and like, do you need that light on? But you say teeth. Okay, so instead of, because I'm listening to some, you know, godforsaken, you know, podcast, the sports talk when I'm brushing my teeth. So you say, do the gratefulness journal, but I'm brushing my teeth with my right hand. All right, I gotta think about this.
Hey, you know what? Figure out what works for you. You know, if we've learned anything today, it's about adapting to the way that you live your life.
Okay. So, all right. Well, I will incorporate this practice. And then here's another thing that I do for accountability. And the reason why, you know, I've been able to do this podcast day after day after day is that I am where I made these podcasts and there's an expectation that they will come. And if they don't come, so many people will be angry and be looking for them on social media. So I have a deadline like every single day in terms of the podcasts that are promised to be put out. And that's what keeps me accountable. So, Alec, please be sure to be Following up with me when we talk more about how's the gratefulness journal going. And now I'm going to be like, oh, I have to do it because now I said for Alec to ask me about it. And then if I don't, then I'm going to be embarrassed when he asks me about it. So I have to figure out ways to keep myself accountable.
All right, man. I will do that for you.
Okay.
I will absolutely check
out. I'm going to do it. I have the notebook.
I believe you. And you know, I hope a lot of listeners do the same. Start small and then slowly you'll start to.
But it's just going to be bullet points. It's not going to be a paragraph.
I've got like a line each.
Yeah, it is
no big deal. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, and actually, while I'm at it, I would say while people are keeping a journal anyway, if you want to throw in the one thing that you did today that was a little bit of a progress step in the right direction, I do that too. And it's kind of a kill two birds with one stone deal where I'm kind of keeping track and holding myself accountable of that one as well.
That's good. That's good. Okay, Alec.
Cool.
All right. Is there one more piece?
There is one more piece. And I sort of saved this one for last because I think that a lot of people hear the word meditation and they immediately get ready to turn off the podcast.
Oh, boy. Okay.
I'm encouraging you guys to hear this one out because I'm not just advocating for meditation. This step is called find your way to be more mindful. And I'm not going to limit it to meditation, though I will confess that I'm probably the most educated on meditation, at least more so than the other forms of mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to talk about why mindfulness is really, really important to do at least somehow. And I'm going to start by talking about a study from Harvard. It's by Matthew Killingsworth and Dan Gilbert. And they basically did a study where they were constantly texting people, a bunch of test subjects, not just random people, of course.
Yeah.
And they would just check in with them at random times of the day. And they would ask simply, is your mind wandering? And the person would say yes or no.
And it's like, yes, I just got a text message. I was and then you texted.
Yeah, well, because if they're using their phone and like maybe they're on social media and they're not thinking about anything.
The tree is dead now. That's on your hands. You killed it.
Killed the tree. Wow. I didn't realize that these Harvard researchers were so bad until right now.
No,
Stevie I'm reevaluating everything, Rob. You got me.
Yeah.
Tree killers.
Yes.
Tree killers.
Okay, so I'm sorry to interrupt again, Alan.
No, you're fine, man. So they also checked in with these people and they asked general questions about their happiness later on. So it turned out that people's minds were wandering, as in they were not focused on what they were doing, almost 50% of the time. Like, 46% specifically. And I've told this study to people and some of them are like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I'm like, that's so much.
Yeah.
That is really a lot. Because generally we're not as worried about things when we're focused directly on them. Right. And if our minds are wandering almost 50% of the time, that's not terrible if all of your thoughts are positive. But nowadays, that's probably not the case for a lot of people. So they were actually able to find a direct correlation between the amount of time that people's mind wandered and their happiness level.
Yeah.
The more time that their mind was wandering, the less happy they were as a whole, which is really an interesting study and really important because we're really putting this into perspective of the fact that when people are not focused on the activity that they're doing, they're not happy. That's
yes.
a really big deal.
Yes.
So when we go back to social media again and you are skimming through your Facebook account, you have no idea that you're even doing it. Your mind's just basically wandering. You're not focused on your activity. Then that's hurting you. Now, stopping your mind from wandering, easier said than done. and that is where mindfulness comes in.
Mm-hmm.
This is a direct way that you can start to work on making yourself more mindful so that you can limit all of this mind wandering that's happening in your life. So I'm going to start with meditation because again, I know meditation the best. And if you don't like the word meditation, feel free to just call it a breathing exercise because I want to kind of reshape how people think about meditation a little bit. I think there's a lot of misconceptions about it. So first and foremost, meditation is not about stopping your thoughts from happening at all. It is entirely about noticing the thoughts that are coming into your mind and putting kind of a label on them and saying, okay, I'm thinking this right now, and just practicing that. And there's a pretty strong chance that the very first time that you meditate, your mind is going to wander the entire 10 minutes. And I know that a lot of people are afraid to give themselves 10 minutes to let their mind wander. But to that, I kind of say, your mind is wandering anyway, a lot of the time. Meditation is not just about, I guess, trying to sit there and notice your thoughts. It's also about having the discipline to just take 10 minutes away from your day when it's actually a really hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. We're so addicted to our phones and a lot of the sensory parts of our life, I guess, that it's kind of scary to take that time away.
Yeah.
So even if you do sit there and you barely get anything out of it, you still did a great thing by allowing yourself to take that 10 minutes and just prove to yourself that you can do it, that you actually have the willpower to do it. And also, breathing is just good for you. A lot of people who are stressed all the time are forgetting to breathe a lot, or they're just constantly breathing very quickly and they have no idea. If you're listening to this podcast right now, think to yourself, have I thought about like any of the breaths that I've taken? And if you haven't, that's probably normal because nobody's constantly thinking about how they're breathing on a normal basis. But there's just as equal of a chance that you have been taking really quick breaths that are stressing you out than breaths that are like a little bit more consistent and healthy.
Yeah, I think that this is really big. I'm not a meditator. I've tried to do it, but what I do find is that, you know, and tell me if you feel like this is similar or not, that I think that if you can also find activities that are getting you into that state of flow, which is when you're doing an activity. And a lot of times I find for me, it's doing a podcast where that if I'm not on a podcast, like I'm a big multitasker, and people are actually bad at multitasking, and people think they're good at multitasking, but you're doing five things and you're doing none of them actually very well. You know, I'm listening to a podcast. I'm like, I'm reading something. I'm also like, I'm watching a kid. Like it's not good. But when we're able to like, and for me, I find this often in a podcast where that if I was like, trying to do some other thing and also have this conversation, I wouldn't be able to do a very good job. But if I'm able to be just focused on you and what you're saying in this conversation and blocking out like any of the rest of the noise, that I feel like that is a similar thing. And I've heard Bryce talk about this on his podcast in terms of he's a runner, and running is his meditation, where he's able to run and block out the world, and you're able to get so engrossed in an activity that you are able to focus on only that activity and block out the rest of the thing. That's the same idea, correct?
It absolutely is. Actually, that's great, Rob, because that was kind of what I was literally going to get into next as we start to move into other forms of it.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I would say that you're a little bit off about is that podcasting is a meditation for you.
Yes.
That is it. So, meditation doesn't necessarily just involve sitting there for 10 minutes. There's a lot of different ways that you can do it. And yours is through podcasting. That's your meditative state or your flow, as we can go ahead and put it now.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. And it's true. Meditation is not for everybody. And here's my feeling on meditation. It can work for everybody, but it will not work for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very difficult to get yourself in the right state of mind to meditate if you are really just... Let me use a study to describe what I'm trying to say. So Hedy Colbert, I believe that I got her name. Hedy Colbert. She's a professor from Yale University, and she's done a lot of work on meditation. And they did a study with a bunch of people who have never meditated before once in their lives. They gave them just 10 minutes. They had to meditate, and then they were going to do a cognitive task at the end, like some kind of puzzle or something like that. They also tested some people who did not meditate that did the same task. The people who meditated did better on the task, except for the people who self-reported for high levels of neuroticism. So what's interesting about that is that there's two explanations there. It could be because people who are neurotic can't really meditate as well. And maybe there is a point that they could meditate if they worked at it, which there is research being done on that. Or it could also be, you are already so aware of your neuroticism that you feel like the second that you enter a meditation, you can't put yourself in that frame of mind.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of good evidence. It's not necessarily for everybody, but I don't want to off-put people with this. I totally meditated for a full hour before I started this podcast
today.
Wow. Yeah, which sounds insane, and I'm not at all recommending for people to do that. But I never in a million years would have been able to do that when I started meditating. Mm. I've, you know, done it for a very long time now. And it's the longest meditation I've ever done.
Get it all in now, Alec, because when you have kids one day, there will be no more hour-long meditation. So I just want to brace
no
you for that.
Time. Oh, yeah. No, there's certainly... it was really, really tough. I'm not going to pretend like it was. It wasn't like I was sitting there in a Zen state for an hour.
Yeah.
I was checking out, making sure that I didn't have an email from you that I was missing something from
No, it's perfect.
Podcast,
okay, but... wow. Hour-long meditation.
Yeah, again, seriously, don't be off. But by that, it's just that... You know, I guess the point that I'm trying to illustrate is that once you practice, it slowly becomes a lot easier.
Like anything.
As overwhelming as that. Yeah, like anything.
And the instruction should be, if you want to meditate 1 minute a day.
Yeah, honestly, the thing is, you don't even have to close your eyes. If you just want to sit there and breathe, that is still really, really good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Just an alternate, because a lot of people, sort of what you were alluding to, the part that they can't really get is just sitting there and breathing. So there are different ways, like there's a series called Zenimation on Disney Plus, if anybody happens to have Disney Plus. And if you're somebody who needs visuals to be able to focus on your breath, you feel like maybe that extrasensory, I don't know how to say that, that extrasensory experience will help you, then by all means, like that's a really good one. It's really calming to watch. A lot of people do yoga. And I've actually taken up yoga myself. It's not as much my thing as meditation is.
Yes.
But it does give you a chance to practice breath awareness while moving and having somebody constantly talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you are going to try actually meditating like the normal, I shouldn't say the normal way, but the way that everybody thinks about it, I would definitely start with a guided meditation if you've never done it before, mm-hmm. because it's going to be really good to help keep you on track.
Yeah.
And a good app that you can use to get started that's free would be Insight Timer.
Okay.
I don't really believe that meditation should be a paid thing, but I also recognize, you know, some people who do the guides kind of need to get paid also.
Yeah.
So if
I've played with Headspace before.
Yeah, I was going to say Headspace is the best one if you're willing to spend a little bit of money on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just not somebody who wants to pay for a meditation when I feel like... it's something that should kind of be enjoyed free, but maybe that's a little bit selfish of me. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that probably there are some people that are like, hey, I want to learn this. I'm going to just slip. If I pay for it, then I'll use it also. That's also like if you're a type of person that's motivated by that, that's paying for the app. If you think you'll use it, you know, maybe that could help you.
Yeah, or start off with something free, see if you like it, and then start to move that direction if it's really your thing.
Mm-hmm.
But
Spencer
Bledsoe,
I believe, does a guided meditation every day on Instagram.
Does he really? Oh, that's a great idea. So, like Survivor fans, if you want to get started with it, go to Spencer's Instagram.
Lad.
That's
yeah.
No, I love that. Because Spencer talked about meditation on the last podcast that you had.
I mean,
with
he
him.
Has been, you know, I believe to Nepal. He has studied it all over the world.
I think that's fantastic. And, you know, there's going to be varying levels of how seriously people take it. It can be good for everybody. You don't necessarily have to get something spiritual out of it. If you do, I think that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I love that Spencer's doing that. I think it's great.
Okay.
So I think we pretty much got through the meditation part because you talked about flow. Find your form of mindfulness. That's kind of what I'm going for.
Mm-hmm.
If that's yoga, if it's a regular meditation, you know, if it's podcasting, if that's something that makes you feel good and puts you in that meditative state, it's terrific. Just make sure that in those moments you are being intuitive about your feelings, because the reason that we do this is so that on a normal basis, you're able to pull that out and you're able to remind yourself, oh, I need to like put myself back in this space where I can breathe again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Alec, any other thoughts on steps that people could be taking for...
Yeah. So the very last thing that I want to throw out to people is that there's a fantastic happiness researcher named Dr. Lori Santos. She is seriously a hero of mine. She has a podcast called The Happiness Lab, which you may have heard of. But the most important thing that I'm going to bring up is that she's a Yale instructor and she has a class on happiness science. And basically a way that people can improve their lifestyle. And it's absolutely free on Coursera. Mm-hmm. She has done this because it was a very successful class at Yale, and she wanted everybody to be able to get to take the class, whether they were a Yale student or whether they weren't. And people who started off taking the class reported that they were a 6.5 out of 10 on the happiness scale. They finished the class after some time being surveyed at a 7.9.
Whoa.
And that's because she's teaching a lot of the things that we talked about today. So if you are looking for more on this, if the things that I talked about interested you today, there's so many more things. I only talked about seven vague ones that tend to help a lot of people. But you might really be able to find something that you specifically need to hear from that. I'm not a therapist. I'm not going to be able to cater to people's individual situations. And I recognize that everybody's situations are different. But I think that that course is just a great way. If you really want to pursue this further, take her course or listen to her podcast. She's wonderful.
Can you give that link one more time?
Yes. So it's going to be Dr. Lori Santos. And it's going to be the Coursera course. Let me make sure that I have the name correct. The Science of Well-Being.
Okay. Alec, thank you so much for sharing all of this. It's all of the advice that you gave me. I'm certainly especially grateful for you coming on. And I do hope that this is something that I feel like can help some listeners, because I do feel like just in talking to people and you see some of the calls we do on the Facebook Friday. I feel like a lot of times people are, calling, and, I do think that there's a lot of people that are not feeling great overall right now for a variety of different reasons. But I do think that with some of the stuff that we talked about, I think that the people can put some productive changes into the works and maybe be feeling a little bit better.
Rob, anything that I can do to help the amazing community that you have created, I would go miles for. I really, really mean that.
Would you jump across a ledge on a mountain?
Maybe some more training first.
Okay. All right. Alec, where could people follow more of what you're doing?
So on Twitter, I am HappyAlec1.
Yes. Oh, HappyAlec1. Okay,
yeah,
great.
Easy enough to find. I, at the moment, don't tweet that much, but
that's why you're so happy.
I'm probably going to start maybe posting new happiness science that comes out that's reputable, so that people can have a spot to make sure that they're getting the correct information. That could be a way that I might be able to start using Twitter more. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to like do DMs or anything like that, just because again, social media is not really for me. Mm-hmm. But if there's anything that I can do to help people, I would like to try to kind of do that.
Yes. What's that Twitter name one more time?
HappyAlec1.
The one like the number?
Yes.
I can't find you yet. Is there an underscore in there?
There is not, but it's recently been changed.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see if we can track that down. Check out Alec over on Twitter. And of course, Alec, this was really, really great. I hope that we can do some more stuff like this in the future.
That would be wonderful, Rob. And before we close it out, I was just wondering if I could dedicate this podcast to somebody. I found out this morning that a friend passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
No, and listen, I think that with something like this, I don't want people to get the impression that just because I've been studying all of these things that every day is happy, because it's not. Like, there is sadness in the world, and sometimes we have to deal with some hard things.
Yeah.
My friend Jason, I wanted to just make sure that I shouted out his name today. He is a really, really happy guy. He radiated joy. And I wanted, because I happen to have the platform today, to be able to just put his name out there and tell everybody what a wonderful person he was.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm very sorry about your loss, Alec.
That is all right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So shout out to Jason, and really appreciate everybody that took the time to listen to this. Hope that you are able to get something out of this conversation, because I know I took a lot away from it. So thank you so much for listening. We are going to have much more to come this week, of course, that probably... we will not, probably much more, the normal nonsense that we have on Rob as a podcast, which does, I think, still have a place in terms of making some people happy along the way. We hope.
That's right. We hope. Put it better.
We hope. Okay. All right. Thank you so much for listening. Take care. Thank you again, Alec. Bye.
Thanks, Rob.